You're listening to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Big John McCarthy has witnessed the best that the UFC had to offer.
That is it! Game, set, match! We have a new champion!
Your backstage pass to the world of mixed martial arts and combat sports on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network.
Let's get it on!
Hey everyone, welcome to Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and me, Sean Wheelock. Every week on this podcast, John and I give you an inside look at MMA and combat sports, always separating fact from fiction. On this week's program, we'll discuss Holly Holm's epic win over Ronda Rousey from last weekend's UFC 193 in Australia, examining what Holm did right, what Rousey did wrong, what's next for both fighters, and what this means for women's MMA. Big John and I will also give you our picks for the greatest upsets in MMA and debate where Holm versus Rousey ranks in the history of the sport. Plus, we'll look at the canceled main event from this past weekend's ONE Championship in Singapore due to Luis Santos failing to make weight in his title bout versus Ben Askren. And as we do on every episode of Let's Get It On, John will answer your questions. Ask away via email, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com, and on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Remember that you can download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Let's Get It On is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/letsgetiton. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, and MP3 player. Well, the media coverage following Holly Holm's spectacular second-round knockout win versus Ronda Rousey at UFC 193 in Melbourne, Australia, has largely focused on what Rousey did wrong from fight camp through the weigh-in through to the title bout. But John, out of respect for the UFC's new women's bantamweight champion, let's open the program by first discussing what Holly Holm did right. And to me, that starts with the fact that Holm implemented an outstanding strategy.
Well, I mean, if you look at, you know, just look at the way she handled herself during her time, you know, in Melbourne, and from the weigh-in is when we really got to see her, you know, the way she handled herself at the weigh-in, what happened between, you know, her and Ronda at the weigh-in. And many times you look at the weigh-ins are nothing but, you know, it's hype. It's the fighters hyping the fight. It's getting, you know, the crowd, you know, ready for it and all that. But she handled herself well when Ronda and her had a little bit of a scuffle. She didn't freaking really take part of it. But you could see the seriousness in her face. You saw that, you know what, she was not in any way intimidated. And that's a big thing because, look at, pro fighters, they all have skills and they all have the skills to beat one another. But with, you know, everybody, we all have doubts. We have doubts with ourselves. We have doubts in what, you know, we're going to be able to do. And those doubts are what start to decay you and degrade your abilities in a fight, especially if you really doubt your ability going in the fight. And you could see she didn't have doubts. She handled it like the true professional that she is, a person that has had, you know, let's, you know, now take a look at, you know, 20 championship fights, you know, over 40 professional fights. She showed that she had the demeanor, she had the disposition, she had the ability to handle the pressure and deal with it the right way so it didn't affect her going into the fight. When she came out, I thought she looked good. I was sitting around people and some people were saying she looks nervous. I said, I think she looks great. She looks confident. She looks good. She looks ready. She's doing the same thing she always does when she was in the cage, bouncing back and forth. That's her MO. That's what she does. She was ready when the fight started. She did exactly what I thought she would do. She used movement, lateral movement, and she was going to try to keep things at a distance and frustrate. That's exactly the fight that, you know, we had all just talked about. If she's going to be successful, she needs to use her kickboxing and use her boxing at a length to keep Ronda away. Use a good left hand, straight left hand, but use that right hook and set Ronda up as Ronda comes in. You want to hit her with that right hook and come with that straight left. She did that. Everything that she did, you could see she had prepared for things that happened in the cage during that fight. You could see as they were happening, she was like, I know how to deal with this. And boom, she dealt with it and she moved on from it. and the fight just started going her way.
So much of the media coverage, and moving beyond the MMA media coverage, although there was some of this in MMA media, but to general news coverage, actually was in my hotel room in St. Louis, Missouri, and the next morning CNN is running something, and it's essentially Rousey loses, not Holm wins. And to general media, and even outside of sports, when you're talking CNN or popular culture, fair enough, because Ronda Rousey, as we've mentioned many times here on Let's Get It On, has transcended out of just being an MMA fighter. She is a pop culture phenomenon. But Holly Holm won this fight. She threw the jab. Ronda Rousey had no answer for that jab. She was so good. Two sequences on the ground. And John, I was talking to you about this in a conversation. The grappling coach I've been working with for about the last 4 months now, he always talks about when we drill arm bars, steal back the arm. And when Holly Holm is in the position scrambling, I just was thinking, steal back the arm. I don't know if Greg Jackson uses that terminology, but it's something to the effect of just yank the arm out, get to safety. And then later in the fight, when Holm had top position, she threw a couple of punches, she jumped up, and she got it back to the stand-up. To me, ultimately, as the fight was going, I could see the knockout coming. I'm sure you could too, because Rousey had absolutely no idea what to do with the Holm jab. I'm not saying Holm landed it at will, but she was landing with tremendous frequency and tremendous power.
Yeah, well, you know, what really happened is Ronda ended up getting trapped on the outside in the area that she didn't want to be. Now, no matter what all the hype is and all the talk and, you know, what about her boxing skills or anything like that, obviously her boxing skills have gotten better. But I don't think that she wanted to box with a boxer. She's not that, she's not that stupid when it comes to the sport and what she's capable of. And she ended up having a hard time closing that distance. And when she got trapped on the outside, that was creating problems, because all of Holm's counters, every time that Ronda would rush in, all those counters and that, even when she switched steps and she came back and she hit her with a left hook and a right cross, or she came back and she, went back to the southpaw, hit her with a right hook, left straight down the middle, and she was popping her head back. And all of those, they frustrate you. And that was the one thing that I saw out of Ronda. She was getting frustrated. She was burning energy trying to get in on her. And at a time when you want to tell her, relax, slow down, it's okay, it's a long fight, you don't have to get this done. And I think that, sometimes in a fighter's head, they'll start to get in this thing, I've got to get this over with, She's done it so many times that, you have 25 minutes to try to get that fight over with. You don't have to do it in the first minute. You don't have to do it in the fifth minute. You have 25. If it happens in the fifth minute, great. If it happens in the 25th minute, fine. Don't rush and don't get yourself in a position where you're chasing somebody in a fight, because you start to chase, you're going to make mistakes.
Early in the fight, and it's from the southpaw stance now, so this isn't a left jab. This is a straight left that Holm is throwing from the southpaw stance. She lands it flush, and Rousey's mouth goes wide open. And Rousey just had a look on her face like she had never really been hit. Obviously, she's been hit, but I don't think she'd ever been hit like that. And you look at Holly Holm, maybe she doesn't hit as hard as Christian Cyborg Santos, but Holly Holm was a champion women's boxer. She really hits hard. And from that southpaw stance, she was cracking that left. She was fluid. She would switch stances, the combinations. Obviously, MMA isn't about boxing. If it was, we would have seen a lot of male boxing champions come over and do great. And history tells us the opposite has happened. But those punches were so effective, which set up Holm's complete MMA game. I saw it, though, starting with her boxing, John.
Well, when you're looking at Ronda being a standard stance fighter and Holly being a southpaw, anytime you're starting to talk about fighting a southpaw, you need to control the distance and you need to control the position of the fight. I need to keep my foot. My left foot needs to be on the outside of her right foot, because if she steps across my foot, now that left hand, that straight left, is in a position to hit me, and my right hand, my power hand, is not in a great spot to deliver a counter. And so that little foot play is a big part, and Ronda was losing that. And if you watch, she would back Holly into the fence, and it almost seemed like every time she did, Holly all of a sudden got towards the fence, could feel that she was close, and kind of set her feet and would throw that straight left down the pipe. and then either would come with the right hook or she came with a right uppercut into her and circled out of it and got herself out of that pressure that Ronda was putting her into every time.
I'm sure from Rousey's perspective, she's thinking, I lost this fight, Holm didn't win this fight. So as we look at it now from the Ronda Rousey perspective, first of all, she looked really angry. And I know she's intense, but this was a different look to me. She looked really angry. And as you and I talk about all the time, when is it ever a good idea to fight angry? The answer is never. Didn't you get that sense that Rousey was angry for some reason?
You know, I did. And it's unfortunate if that's true. I think it's just the pressure of everything. And, you know, when things, you know, and I know when I first started, you know, fighting and getting hit in the face, it would make me mad, and it would make it to where I got mad and I wanted to go, you know, hit the person back. And you have to learn to deal with, hey, I'm going to get hit. That's just part of this game. And I can't get mad about it. I just have to say, you know what? Okay, I'll get you back. And you just keep on knowing, I'm going to get you back. I'm going to get you back. But you cannot ever, I tell everyone, if you fight angry, you will lose. Because the most important element you have in the fight is your mind. When your mind is working, you have the ability to have your body do things, and you can make up for things that are occurring to you. But if your mind starts to go in any way, anger, or you start to not believe, you're done. It's a bad position to be in. And in the fight, you know, it seemed to me that she was, you know, she had some anger towards it. And I don't know why. Maybe she didn't. It just seemed like it as the fight was progressing on, that she was really pushing. And, you know, when you start, you know, going into the fence and, you know, swinging and missing and falling down and those things, that's not being a controlled fighter. And, you know, look at, you know, all of the success that Ronda has had over time is because she's good. Don't take this loss and say, oh, she sucks now. You know, people are like, look at, Ronda is a phenomenal fighter. She's a phenomenal athlete. She is amazing. She, just like everybody else, at some point in their career, runs into that person that is in the position, in the right place at the right time, to teach you a lesson about this sport. Because this sport is so hard to be the very best every time, because there's so many ways, as we say it all the time, there's just so many ways for you to win, and there's so many ways for you to lose. And if you make mistakes, you're going to lose. And it's hard sometimes for people to realize, man, I tell everyone, I just don't see people going through this sport undefeated. Just don't see it. There's just too many variables in this for that to happen. Could it happen? It could. You can prove me wrong, but it hasn't happened yet.
A few weeks ago, my mom called me up. I think we mentioned this on the program, John, and she said, oh, Ronda Rousey is on Ellen DeGeneres. My mom knows who Ronda Rousey is. You know, my mom will watch her son commentate fights. She's hardly an MMA fan, but she knows Ronda Rousey. But she's a big fan of Ellen DeGeneres' program, and she was excited. And I thought, you know, that's interesting. And then about a week later, my mom calls and she says, oh, Sean, you might want to put on Entertainment Tonight. Ronda Rousey is being interviewed. She's walking a red carpet. And now I'm thinking, Holly Holm is probably in the gym. Every time Ronda Rousey is promoting her book or walking a red carpet or doing a television appearance or doing some sort of personal appearance, probably in Albuquerque, New Mexico, training with Mike Winklejohn and Greg Jackson is Holly Holm. And she is focusing on the fight and Ronda Rousey is focusing on her overall career. I'm not saying that was the deciding factor. I'm saying that was definitely a factor.
You know, there's no doubt about it, but that's part of being the champ. And that's why it's so difficult. And this is what people don't understand is everyone looks at it and thinks, oh, that's so cool. You get to go on Ellen, or you get to go on the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, or you get to go all that. That's time. It's effort. It's hard. It takes away from your training. It takes away from your focus. It takes away from everything. And those are things that champions have to do. And this is why it's so hard to hold on to that belt. There's the weight that comes with it is immense. I tell people that all the time, and you expect these people, oh, you know, that person's gonna be champ forever. No, they're not. The weight of being the champion it's a huge, huge weight that the common person that doesn't compete and doesn't do this just doesn't understand what comes with it. There's a lot of great things that come with it. I mean, some phenomenal things that come with it. And there's a lot of things that come with it. Man, they're just bad. And they're hard to deal with. And they're frustrating. And it's all part of the package. You wanted the package. You fought for the package. You got the package. Congratulations. Now don't let the package crush you.
25 years ago in Tokyo, Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson. It still stands as one of the biggest upsets in boxing history. It was really easy for boxing pundits and analysts and writers afterwards to say, oh, I saw it coming. And as we move further down, 25 years on now, you can say, well, Tyson didn't have a proper trainer. He was gone from Kevin Rooney. Customato had passed away. They were so arrogant in the Tyson camp, they didn't even bring a cut man. They didn't have Enswell. Tyson was overweight. He got flash knockdown in training. He wasn't eating right. He wasn't living right. It was so easy. But at the time, it was a huge shock. And I'm not saying that Rousey versus Holm is Tyson Douglas, but I will tell you honestly, John, is Ronda Rousey was walking in, I said to the guys I was watching the pay-per-view with, I'm thinking a lot about Tyson Douglas. And looking at Holm and looking at Rousey, it just flashed me back. And I remember that night. I remember as a kid very well where I was watching Tyson Douglas. I had no idea Tyson was going to lose, but I'm telling you, I had a feeling. And I'm not saying, wow, I called this beautifully. There was just an energy to that fight that I could sense watching on pay-per-view that something might be up. And now it's easy to look at Rousey. We've talked about a lot on the show. There's some family drama going on. There's drama going on with her trainer, Edmund Tarverdian. There's a lot of backstory stuff now that maybe people can put together the pieces and say, well, yeah, she was ripe for a fall. This was going to happen. But I think you were probably the only person who was publicly saying, there's a good chance that Holm is going to win this fight. Everybody else is now saying, well, yeah, it makes sense that Holm won the fight, but nobody saw that before.
Yeah, I got raped for saying that Holm, you know, look, this is a good fight. And I really thought it was. I thought Holly was the person that had a skill level that, you know what, she matches up very well against what, you know, in my opinion, Ronda's weakest at, and that's her striking. And, you know, no matter what, you know, media puts out, it doesn't matter. It's, you know, you look at the effectiveness of what they're doing and how well they do it. And look at Holly's striking is just on a different level than Ronda's right now. Just like, you know, let's be honest, Ronda's judo is on a different level than Holly's is. It's just they both have their strengths. And it was a matter of, well, you know, to sit there and to, when they took the fight, I guess, away from Miesha Tate and put Holly in and everyone was complaining. And I thought, hey, no, that's the right thing to do. That's the person. That girl's undefeated. She's undefeated as an MMA fighter. She was a world champion as a boxer. She was a world champion as a kickboxer. My God, why is that a bad fight? That's the fight that you can sell. That's a fight that's actually a real fight. That's a fight that people haven't seen it already. That's a fight that, you know what? Either person can win that, and this can be a very good match with a lot of different varieties to it based upon we got one person that's going to want to take this thing to the ground, and we got one person that's going to stand up. Because if that person that should stand up goes to the ground, they're going to be in trouble. And if that person that should go to the ground wants to stand up, they're probably going to be in trouble. So, you know, that this is why they fight the fights. It doesn't matter what all the people say. It doesn't matter what all the, you know, I thought this. This is why they fight the fight. In the end, you know who's going to win. Okay, great. We'll find out.
John, and I'll give you full credit. I had that sense walking in, but beforehand, and I commentated one of Holly Holmes's fights when I was with Bellator. We had her fight in Albuquerque, and she was still early in her career. There was a lot of heat on her, but it was mainly coming from boxing and the fact that she trained with Winkle, John, and Jackson. But she had a one-fight deal in Bellator, and then she was gone, and it was on an undercard, and I really had the sense.
Boy, did Bellator blow that.
Oh, man. And, you know, when I had the sense, she was only there because we were fighting in Albuquerque and she was living and training in Albuquerque. And Bellator still has that philosophy. They'll put on a lot of hometown fighters. But I saw flashes of Holly Holm. I didn't think she was phenomenal that night. I thought she was a phenomenal person. She struck me as someone who had real character and integrity. And I remember in her fighter interview, and I speak to every fighter about 15 to 25 minutes, I remember thinking to myself, I see why she was a world champion in boxing, because she just carries herself correctly. And I've followed her into the UFC, so I knew what she brought. I was surprised, though, at how easily she was landing that left hand. because Ronda Rousey, and I said when we started the program, that to me was really the turning point in the fight. There was no answer for that left hand. Holm was getting off the jab, and then she was getting off the straight left and the left cross out of the southpaw stance. And Rousey was eating those flush, and her mouth was getting more and more wide open.
Well, she suffered a nice big cut on her, you know, her lower lip. You know, she got a big gash that I know had to be, you know, sutured up. So, you know, that left hand got to her, that nice straight left hand, it did its work, you know, and that's just part of what happens. But, man, you know, again, this is why you can't expect someone to go undefeated in this sport. It's just not going to happen. Too many things can happen in a fight. And Holly, you know, with everything that she had going with her, she has experience. That experience is huge. It's a huge factor. And if, you know, anybody that, you know, has ever fought, the more times you go in there and the more relaxed you are on going in and not burning energy on the outside and just saying, you know what, let me just do what I've trained to do. And that's what she went and did. And that's why she came out on top.
So what's next for Holly Holmes? Well, she looks to defend her title. Is it going to be Rousey in an automatic rematch? You know, we had been counting down to, and we thought it might be UFC 200, Rousey versus Cyborg, but now that's off. But Holmes versus Cyborg, still a really attractive fight.
That's a great fight.
The automatic rematch is a great fight. Miesha Tate versus Holly Holmes is a great fight. This is good, I think, big picture for the UFC, and this is great big picture for women's MMA. It's bad, obviously, for Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
It's tremendous for Holly Holm, but just the big picture, you and me, we never care who wins. We have friends in this sport, but ultimately, you're the referee, I'm the commentator. We do not care who wins. But if you just look at this from this big picture perspective, who really won beyond Holly Holm was women's MMA.
Absolutely. It opened up so many possibilities for everything. I hear people all the time say, oh, the UFC is, they're upset with this. No, they're not. What do you, you know, look at.
Why would they?
Any promoter that goes out there, you know, having to have one fighter win is in a deep, deep position of trouble with their promotion. All right. You cannot worry about who wins. All you can do is go out and put on good fights that made the best person win. And that's what happened on this night. You know, you can go and you can look at Holly and what she's done in the UFC. She fought Raquel Pennington. You know, she did that back at what, UFC 184? And, you know, it was a split decision. You could tell that she was nervous coming into that promotion with that fight. There was a lot, you know, riding on her. And that's part of, you know, you see all these fighters, male and female, coming into the UFC. Their first fight, they usually have problems there. It's tough on them. You know, because there's a pressure that comes with it. And then, you know, in her next fight, what she fought Marion, right? Renew?
Right.
And, you know, look at, she, you know, she dominated that fight. She didn't put Marion away, but she dominated the fight and she looked much better. And in this one, she again just upped that level of her confidence and her being confident walking into that cage. It's now home. And she went out and did her job. She went and did what she prepared to do.
I think that there must be people, maybe not in the inner circle, but that next ring of advisors and maybe sycophants and hangers-on, maybe more of the pop culture and showbiz people around Rousey who are saying, walk away. I mean, Gina Carano walked away. She lost to her only fight to Cyborg, and that was it. And next stop was Hollywood and Steven Soderbergh and a whole new career. I think Ronda Rousey, everything that I know about her, the fact that she's a judo Olympian, a bronze medalist, who her mom is, her family, her competitive nature, she won't walk away. But can't you imagine those sort of next tier of people, the advisors saying, look, kid, you have a beautiful face. You took a bad concussion. Get out while the getting's good. I don't think she will, but I think she's going to hear that from some people.
You know what? I think she's too competitive just in life.
Oh, and I agree. I agree.
So, you know, she's going to hear a lot of things and stuff, but, you know, what she needs to hear is, hey, everybody falls down. We all fall down somewhere along the way. You had a great run. You fell down. It's time to get up. It's time to start walking forward and prove who you are by the steps that you take from this point forward. That's what determines who and what you are. And, you know, everything in the past, hey, she earned everything that she got. She earned the respect. She earned getting on to, you know, the movie stuff. She did all that through her actions. Now go out and recreate it and make it happen again. You know, she's going to be fine.
I find the backlash on Rousey now troubling. I think from a societal point.
I think it's sad.
It's troubling. It really is because it's she goes sad. From being people the are, most dominant athlete.
Ridiculous.
Go ahead, John.
People are just, you know, I'd say people are assholes. You know, they want people to, you know, have these, you know, dominant personalities and do these dominating things. And they love it. And they cannot wait to see him fall so they can sit there and point a finger at him like, ha, ha, ha. It's just pathetic. You know what? As hard as these people work to get to these positions and to have these fights, you know, the one thing I tell everyone is, you know, if you lose a fight, big deal. It's a fight. Who cares? It's not that important when it comes to the whole aspect of your life. But the way some fans look at it, it's the end of the world if the fighter loses the fight. It's not the end of the world. It's a goddamn fight. So what? She lost. No big deal. Let's see what she does from this point forward. That's the way to look at it.
And my point I was going to make and why I find it so troubling is people 48 hours before the fight are saying, she's the most dominant fighter on the planet, the greatest fighter in the history of MMA. And about 2 minutes after the fight are saying, she's a fraud. She was all hyped up. She was a media creation.
Yeah, same people. Oh, yeah. You know, everyone's got their chance to, you know, stick it to you when you're down. They got the knife in their hand. Let me just poke them a little bit. You know, that's the way people are.
So people who listen to this program, John, know that aside from being MMA hardcores, you and I both love boxing. We're students of boxing history as we are of MMA history, and we're going to get into MMA history in a bit on the program. But a few moments ago, speaking of boxing history, I was talking about Tyson Douglas, February of 1990. Mike Tyson was never the same, and it was as much what happened to him outside of the ring in his personal life as it was inside the ring. But after he got knocked out in Tokyo by Buster Douglas, he was never the same fighter. He was never the same man. It changed him fundamentally. And you could see that as the tipping point. Everything that was going on in his life, right and wrong, mainly wrong, came to a head right there in Tokyo. And Buster Douglas fought an amazing fight, and it was still one of the greatest performances in heavyweight history. It's a real character test. What happens after a loss when you're the champion and you're quote-unquote the unbeatable champion? We know now what happened to Mike Tyson. You know Ronda Rousey a lot better than I do. I don't see her folding. I see her coming back as a champion. Look at what she's done in judo, through the Olympics, through her childhood, through her personal life. But it is a character test. There's no question about it. I think she'll pass, but it's still a character test.
Well, it's a character test in the fact that, you know what, it takes, you know, a certain person to come back and say, hey, you know what, I got to learn from my mistakes. And there were some mistakes made, and you know, be that those were mistakes that were, you know, in the cage during the fight, be it mistakes that were in training, be it mistakes with the people surrounding you and, you know, some of the distractions that might have been in place that, you know, you want to get rid of those so those things don't happen again. Whatever it is, you need to learn from the experience and figure out how to make things better and move on. And, you know, all of them, you know, look at Muhammad Ali lost, you know, George Foreman lost to Muhammad Ali. You know, Muhammad Ali lost to Joe Frazier. Joe Frazier lost to George Foreman. You know, these things happen. This is part of fighting. And, you know, like you're saying, she has competed at the highest level in multiple sports. Okay. She's competed in the highest level in judo. She competed at the highest level in MMA. And she's been successful in all of it. And she's had to, you know, deal with losses in judo. And she's now going to deal with a loss in MMA. But I think that she'll come back just fine. She's going to come back better than ever. You know, I think mentally she's a very strong person. And the one part, you know, people were talking about, like, her after the weigh-in when, you know, she had the little, you know, push match with, you know, Holly and stuff. And she started to stumble in her speech when she was talking to Joe Rogan, saying something about now she's going to beat her. To me, that was her trying to sell. You know, there was, you know, that was a 70,000 seat stadium and she's trying to sell tickets. And so, you know, that was her last little bit to try to sell tickets for, you know, the fight. And, you know, some people understand that and some people don't. And that's just the way it is. But I think that mentally she's a very strong person. She's going to come back. She's going to come back great. And she's going to be a force in the women's bantamweight for as long as she wants to be.
final point on this, and I'm starting to laugh. I didn't even want to give this airtime, but I feel like we need to answer because people are waiting to hear it. So once again, there's the chorus of people saying their works. First of all, they're saying fixes because they don't understand the difference between a fix and a work, and we'll get into that in a moment. But historically, when there have been works in MMA, and by and large, they've happened in Japan and happened in the 1990s, you know what? They end in submissions because that's easy. Works don't end with someone being knocked unconscious. We dealt with this back in June with Kimbo Slice, Ken Shamrock. What is wrong with people? If you're going to work something, give up a Kimura or your neck or fake a heel hook. Don't get knocked unconscious because that's not a really smart work.
Well, the only person I heard saying work was a professional wrestler named Taz.
Taz.
First off, if you're named after a cartoon character, there's a problem. Okay? Right there, you got a problem. All right? Second, you're a professional wrestler. Don't talk about real fighters. That's simple. When you start fighting real fights, then you can start talking about your works.
Every week, we just had to talk about it. He's
not even worth freaking commenting on.
Every week on Let's Get It On, we bring you our poll question. You can cast your vote on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. Last week, we asked you, will you watch the Hoist Gracie versus Ken Shamrock fight in Bellator this February? 71% of you voted yes. This week's poll question, do you feel that Holly Holm's victory against Ronda Rousey ranks as the biggest upset in MMA history? Vote yes or no on our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. You might want to wait to vote until John and I give you our top five all-time MMA upsets, our personal list that's coming up later in the program.
Yeah, of course, I'm kind of like that 71%. I think Bellator is, maybe they did something right there then, huh? 71% say they want to watch it. That's pretty good viewership.
That is very – Bellator would be very happy if 71% of MMA fans across the board. So aside from our poll question, of course, every week on this podcast, John and I answer your questions. Submit them via email info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Also on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. And now you can use the SpeakPipe app. It's on our website, Let's Get It On Podcast. Of course, if you're not using SpeakPipe where you'll say your name, please include a pronunciation guide for your name. So, speaking of works and fixes, first up, this comes from Twitter. @TheAntJimmyShow asks, John, if a ref is sure that both fighters are working / fixing a fight, is there anything he can do? And I just have to get this out as a point of clarification. This is semantics, but this is still, I think, important when people talk about this. So, look. A work is a fight in which the winner is predetermined and both fighters are in on it. That's a work. A fix is a fight in which the winner is predetermined and both fighters are not in on it. So, John, you know, I have a lot of experience refereeing boxing, mainly at a low level. I've been in my large number of works, more than my fair share. But you first. I can think of two works that you were probably involved in. I know you weren't complicit.
Oh, no. You know, first off, to answer the question, if you think something is a work, then, and it's supposed to be what we call a shoot is a real fight. If you think it's a work, then it's your responsibility to go to the commission and advise the person in charge of the commission thing. I believe that this fight has been staged. I believe it is a work. I want you to hold the pay on both fighters so neither fighter gets paid. And hold that until there's an investigation and they look into review of the tape and say, why are you saying it's a work? And that way you will go and explain, this is what they're doing and this is why I'm saying it. And if it's proved that, you know, yep, that's righteous, you're right, then those people will not be paid and then they will lose their license and they'll be suspended for the determined amount of time by the commission where it happens. So that's what would be done if you think that it's a work. How's that?
So two that I can think of, you put it in your book. You've mentioned them this on the show. One was Fry versus Hall. And I was actually out to dinner.
Yes.
And the second one is Macias Takhtarov. I'll tell you with Don Fry, though. I was at the dinner with Don Fry about 5 weeks ago. It was a group of us. And somebody brought up the subject. Don Fry is adamant. I mean, beyond adamant that fight against Mark Hall was not a work. Uh-huh. But you refereed it. I know you feel differently.
Let's see. Here's the question. It's as simple as Don Fry had fought Mark Hall before. And it was an actually long, drawn-out fight. Don Frye was beating the piss out of Mark Hall. He actually bloodied his ribs with punches to his ribs while he was on top of him, punching him. But he couldn't put Mark away. And he was actually, during that fight, telling Mark, just give it up, kid. Just give it up. And Mark looked at him and says, you got to kill me. And that's a true story. And he couldn't get rid of him. And then he ended up being put into the ultimate. And he had the same manager. A guy named Robert DePersia was the manager of Don Frye, and he was the manager of Mark Hall. And you can go, and you know what? Right now, Sean, I want you to go look up Don Frye's fighting record, okay? Mm-hmm. Just look it up, and let's see how many leg lock submissions are on Don Frye's fighting record.
Yeah, he wasn't a sambo master, that's for sure.
Well, he could have been really good at it, but if you're going to do leg locks, you need to do them a certain way. And with the way that Mark Hall tapped and the way his foot was, it told me, no, you didn't get him in a good foot lock. He's not, that straight ankle lock didn't work. He just tapped out. And so that's what told me, that is not a real fight. I think if you talk to Mark Hall, he'll verify that it was not a real fight.
And the other one is Anthony Mad Dog Macias against Oleg Taktarov. And you can find that on MMA Core on Daily Motion, maybe on YouTube. It may be blocked on YouTube. It's hardly even a fight. It's almost like fight should be put in quotes.
That's because Anthony came running across the cage like he's going to attack Oleg, tries to take him down, sticks his head to the side. Oleg gets him in a guillotine and he taps out. And, if you look at it, both, Frye and Taktarov, the same situation occurred. There was a manager, Buddy Albin, at UFC 6 that was the manager of Anthony Macias and Oleg Taktarov. And who is he going to have a better chance of going to the finals, Anthony or Oleg? And they made a decision, you're going to throw the fight. And Anthony throws the fight, so Oleg fight Hank Abbott without actually having to fight a second fight. He had his first fight. It was against Dave Benito. He's getting Benito with a guillotine. He ends up getting a 12-second fight, I don't know what it was, with Macias, and goes in fairly fresh against Tank, who, when that was a really long fight, and really it was Gas Tank, and Oleg was gas too. Gas Tank was one of the big differences in the winning of that fight. Same thing happened with Frye and Hall. Who he was going to compete against, Tank Abbott. Tank was the one that got screwed in both of those.
John, so when I refereed a lot of boxing, especially in the 1990s on the Midwest circuit, and this was before we had athletic commissions in most of the states that I refereed in, or if we had an athletic commission, they were more of like a suggestion than an actual commission. But to my knowledge, I never refereed a fixed fight. I certainly would never be involved. I mean, they were paying me like $50. So I don't know they were going to pay me to fix a fight. I'll tell you, I worked a lot of worked fights. And I always knew what was up was you would see two out-of-state guys who were fighting each other, and they would pull up in the same car. That was usually the tip-off. And what they wanted it to be is they wanted it to be Rocky Balboa versus Apollo Creed. I'll knock you down, you knock me down. They're buddies, they're training partners, sparring partners. They're pulling their punches. They're hitting, but they're not turning it over, and the crowd loves it. I felt helpless. I mean, I was a kid. I was in my early 20s. I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know who to complain to because there wasn't a commission, and I was generally being hired by the promoter, who often would be fighting on the card himself. It really made me upset, though. I didn't find it funny or cute or amusing. It really, really upset me to the point where I just was frustrated and felt kind of helpless. All I would do, honestly, is I would just kind of rough the guys up in the ring. Like when I would break them, I would kind of push them a little harder, which looking back wasn't that smart, just to let them know that I knew what was up and I didn't like it. And then they would work it anyway.
Yeah. Look, if it's going to happen and, they decide that they're going to come in and try to do it, there's nothing you're going to be able to do and, to make it not happen and make them actually start to fight. All you can do is, if you really believe it's happening, you can even stop the fight. You freaking call it and you tell the commission, I want these guys pay held. This right now is a disqualification. They're both out of here, and let the commission deal with it and handle it from there.
everything that you and I are talking about with these works is from the 1990s. It's like we're talking about the 1690s. It seems so long ago in fighting sports, doesn't it?
Well, you know, honestly, you know, people are so into what commissions are doing now and all the different, you know, things that are going on, but things are so much better now.
Absolutely.
And so well handled compared to what they were in the past that people have no idea.
Our next question comes from Josh Hubbard, who asks, John, I feel like if you could issue yellow cards to a fighter after an eye poke warning, then they will train with closed hands. What are your thoughts? I know what your thoughts are.
Yes, that magical yellow card I will pull out of my pocket. That will scare them to the point of they will now close their hand. What is a yellow card? A yellow card is it's a piece of plastic. Okay, it doesn't do anything. It's the same as the warning. That's all it is. Now, in Japan, that yellow card also was associated with a deduction of money from the fighter's purse. Okay, that in essence is wrong. You don't take money from a fighter and give it back to the promoter because the referee has the ability. Okay, it just doesn't work out right. So, you know, do I think a yellow card is the, you know, what's going to take care of, you know, the eye pokes and stuff? No. And the yellow card is not it. What really needs to occur is we need to start to, you know, change maybe some of the rules as far as what's allowed and start to, you know, have the ability. Because right now, a referee, someone puts their fingers out towards their opponent. There's no rule against that. All right. There's nothing that says the fighter can't do that. So you cannot enforce something that is not a foul. And so there needs to be something probably put into place along with, you know, maybe an implementation of better equipment that is not gloves that are, you know, allowing the fingers to stretch, you know, flat out easily. The glove like Bellator, you know, where they have the curved gloves, they tend to seem to have fewer eye pokes in Bellator than they do in the UFC. They're fighting the same sport. So maybe that glove has something to do with it.
Remember, email us your questions, info@letsgetitonpodcast.com, and submit them on Twitter by using the hashtag AskBJM. Still to come on this week's episode of Let's Get It On, Big John and I will discuss the biggest upsets in MMA and debate where Holly Holm's win over Ronda Rousey ranks in the history of the sport. And we'll examine the canceled main event from last weekend's ONE Championship in Singapore due to Luis Santos failing to make weight in his title fight versus Ben Askren. With Big John McCarthy, I'm Sean Wheelock, and you are listening to Let's Get It On.
Hey guys, if you're a fan of Let's Get It On and want to show us some love and support our podcast, before your next Amazon purchase, go to our website at letsgetitonpodcast.com and click the Amazon banner on the right-hand side of the page. It doesn't cost you anything, and there are no extra steps to go through. But doing this supports the podcast and allows us to continue to bring you great content every week. Remember, before you shop on Amazon, go to our website at letsgetitonpodcast.com and click the Amazon banner on the right side of the page. Thanks a lot.
Let's Get It On is presented by Audible.com. Audible is now offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. To download your free audiobook today, go online to audibletrial.com/letsgetiton. Again, that is audibletrial.com/letsgetiton for your free audiobook. Be sure and join me for the 2015 Legends of MMA Hall of Fame Fan Expo and Awards Ceremony on Saturday, November 21st at Sportsman's Lodge Event Center in Studio City, California. There'll be training seminars hosted by Jeremy Horn, Don Fry, Dan Severn, and Ken Yasuda, and autograph signings with Pat Miletich, Mark Coleman, Don the Dragon Wilson, UFC founder Art Davey, and many more. And the night will conclude with the Hall of Fame inductions of Kazushi Sakuraba, Matt Hughes, Chuck Liddell, Judo Gene LaBelle, and Elio Gracie. You can purchase your tickets right now online at legendsofmma.com. Again, that's legendsofmma.com. The 2015 Legends of MMA Hall of Fame Fan Expo and Awards Ceremony, Saturday, November 21st at Sportsman's Lodge Event Center in Studio City, California. I'll see you there.
When looking for new and exciting clothing concepts, look no further than Lambs to Lions. Lamps to Lions has great designs that incorporates the past from boxing with the new and exciting evolution of MMA. We all start out as lambs, but with time, training, and hard work, we can all become lions. Be part of the Lambs to Lions movement and check out all of their great designs. You can get your Lambs to Lions gear at the Las Vegas Fight Shop or go to lambstolionsbrand.com.
Now, back to Let's Get It On with your hosts, Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock.
Earlier here on Let's Get It On, we asked you our poll question. Do you feel that Holly Holm's victory against Ronda Rousey ranks as the biggest upset in MMA history? So, John, before we put that fight in historical perspective, let's you and I now go through our personal biggest five upsets in mixed martial arts all time. We've talked about doing this, but we kept our answers separate from each other, so we might have some overlaps. I think there are going to be a few surprises. I'll tell you that it just worked out this way. I put together my five. You refereed three of them. So this is going to be, I think, very interesting. And if you want to go first, go right ahead. Oh, and I do want to throw out this caveat. You and I don't care about betting odds. So people talking about upsets with betting odds, betting lines, that's not even a consideration. We're talking about historical relevance in the history of MMA in terms of the biggest upsets.
Yeah, well, you know, I look at upsets different than what a lot of people are looking at upsets. You know, when people sit there and they look at something and they'll say, oh, that was a huge upset. It's like, no, it wasn't. That was, you know, that was not at all. Huge upsets are when you have things set up where you know someone's being brought in as a person almost to be the stepping stone or something for somebody else, but or if you have that great record. But let's see. You know, I got a lot of honorable mentions in here, and there's ones I want to talk about because there's fights like when Mike Brown fought Uriah Faber in the WEC and he took Uriah's title. No one expected Mike Brown to beat Uriah Faber.
It's a good one.
I love that fight. That was a great fight. And when Sokaju beat Nogueira in Pride in Vegas, he knocked him out like 20-some seconds into the fight. Look it, Nogueira had fought everyone in Pride. The only one he'd lost the one to Shogun that was a back-and-forth match. Either guy could have won. He had beaten Dan Henderson. He had beat everybody. And Sokaju comes in and knocks him out. And that was one of those ones. You know what? That guy's being brought in. They're not expecting him to be a competition for Nogueira, and he comes out and just knocked him cold. So that was another one that I would have liked to put on the list. It's right there. Randy Couture's on there a couple of times. Randy Couture, you know, when he fought Chuck Liddell, he had two losses. You know, coming on, he lost to Josh Barnett, and then he lost to Rico Rodriguez in trying to recapture the heavyweight belt. Chuck was on like a 10-fight win streak. He was beating everybody. He head kicked Babalu. He just beat everybody. Beat Murillo Bustamante. He was walking through people, and everyone looked at that like, oh, they're bringing Randy in because at least he's a name, but Chuck's going to walk through him, and he's going to get the interim title because at the time, Tito was the champion and was kind of like slip-sliding, trying to keep from fighting Chuck a little bit there. So that was a big one, and then Randy had the one with Tim Sylvia too. That was another big one. I really liked that one. Krokop against Randleman, I still think is one of the biggest ones. Krokop was a part of two. You had Gonzaga. That was a big upset. That was a huge upset.
On the head kick.
Yeah, huge. When Gonzaga, because look at Krokop was being set up to be the guy to fight Couture for the championship because he had just won it. And he had won it from Sylvia. So Krokop's got two. He's got that one and he's got Randleman when Randleman did the gorilla smash on him. Look at Krokop was walking through everyone in Pride and beat, you know, Mark Coleman handily. Mark couldn't come close to beating him as far as getting him down and just got, you know, teed off on. And it was the Grand Prix. And they bring Krokop in. They bring Randleman as his first round opponent. Everyone's going, oh, my God, man. They're trying to kill Randleman. And Randleman hits him with a hand and puts him out. So those were all ones that I really liked along with Weidman and Silva. But the problem with Weidman and Silva, even though it's an upset, but I didn't think it was that big of an upset because I thought Weidman had a really good chance of winning that fight. And so I don't look at that as a huge upset. I mean, I guess people do, but Anderson was older at this point. And man, you look at, he did not want to fight Weidman. You could tell. You know, he was trying to avoid him. There was things about it. You go back and look, and you know, that wasn't that big of an upset. The biggest upsets, in my opinion, number one, Matt Serra versus GSP.
I have that on the list.
That is the biggest upset in UFC history or anything, because you had a guy in Matt Serra. I think he was about 9-4. You know, he got the title fight based upon winning the Ultimate Fighter season 4, I think it was.
John, he was 4-3 in his last 7 fights, Serra entering that title bout. 4-3 in his last 7.
You see? And so, and you know, everyone was upset. They're all like, oh, it's not even a fight. It's no good. And, you know, he came out and he put it on George and, you know, put George away. That is still, that's the biggest upset, because George St. Pierre had walked through everyone. He lost to Matt Hughes on a technical mistake that was, you know, he was beating Hughes in that first round and he made a bad mistake. He went for a Kimura that you don't go with if you don't have your legs to control the body. And, you know, Matt did the right thing, stepped around, took the arm, straight arm bar, and he tapped real fast, not even realizing it was right at the end of the round. But GSP, that was his only loss, you know, at that time. And he was, he had, you know, coming off of beating Matt Hughes, that was probably the biggest one. The other one I put right, you know, right next to it, Fedor against Werdum.
This I have when, that too. Yeah, but and you refereed both of those. I refereed that one as well from Strikeforce.
When Fedor, you know, at that point, you know, the way I say it, Fedor was undefeated in his entire MMA career. And, you know, Werdum, you know, was let go by the UFC. He had gotten knocked out by Junior Dos Santos. He had come into Strikeforce. He had submitted Mike Kyle. And then I can't remember the next fight, but then they put him against, you know, Fedor. And a lot of people were, you know, saying, no, that's just a crap fight. They're setting it up for Fedor. And well, that's
the one
because
the one before was Bigfoot Silva. I called that fight for the world feed. And I remember Jimmy Smith and I did it. And Jimmy said, if Werdum punches like this against Fedor, he's going to get knocked out in the first round.
And, you know, a lot of people thought that. And, you know, he ends up, Fedor made a mistake. You know, he thought he hurt him, and you punched him in the chest, man. You didn't hit his chin. And that was, you know, the triangle from hell, man. He had that thing on and he wasn't letting go of it. And you go to the ground with someone as good as Werdum and get caught in that triangle, anyone's going to tap. So those are my two biggest upsets ever.
Let me throw this one at you, all right?
All right, let's hear it.
I don't know if you're going to like this or not, but to me, this was a big upset. So Pride, November 1999, Kazushi Sakuraba defeats Hoyla Gracie. And I think you put this in perspective, all right? So at that time, the Gracie mystique had never been higher. Hickson, Hoyce, Henzo, Hoyler, all undefeated in MMA. And Sakuraba was doing very well in MMA, but he was a converted professional wrestler. He famously, or from a Brazilian perspective, infamously, catches Hoyler in the Kimura. Hoyler Gracie does not tap. There's the technical submission. The referee stops it. There's a lot of controversy. I think at the time, though, worldwide, I think that was a huge upset, not just for Hoyler and all of his jiu-jitsu credentials, but it was that a Gracie lost and a Gracie was submitted, albeit a technical submission. I think that's been lost a little bit to history, because people then talk about Sakuraba, and they talk more about, I think, the Henzo Gracie win and the Hoyce Gracie win. But I think the one against Hoyler, because it started it, was just such a massive blow. Do you agree with that one?
That was, you know, that's a good one. But the problem with that one is a lot of people won't say that Hoyler lost, because the referee stopped that fight on a submission hold that Hoyler did not tap.
Yeah, on the Kimura.
And on that, they stopped it because they didn't like how far it had been torqued, but there was no tap and they weren't supposed to stop that. So a lot of people said, that's not, but I like the way you look at it. That's a good one. And that was definitely the start of the rise of Pride. That fight with Sakuraba is what, it launched Sakuraba as the Gracie killer. And he was the one that Pride rode the back of. I like that one. That was good. All right. My next one's going to be BJ Penn, Frankie Edgar, UFC 112.
Nice.
No one gave Frankie any kind of, he was not going to beat BJ. That was not going to happen. And he went out there and he beat BJ and took the belt when nobody thought. Everyone was complaining, saying, why are they putting Frankie Edgar against BJ Penn? And that was a huge upset. What's your next? Come on.
Pride, May 2000, Mark Coleman defeats Igor Vovchanchin.
You know what?
Let me frame it and see if you still think, all right? So Coleman's 35. He's seen as past his prime. And he's 4-4 in his last 8 fights. Vovchanchin is 9 years younger. He's 26. He is unbeaten in 37 straight fights. He had 36 wins in a no contest. 37 unbeaten still stands as an MMA record. And it was the third fight of the night for both because it was the Pride Grand Prix. They had had the opening round in January, and then they come back and they have to fight 3 times, quarterfinals, semifinals, now the final. So Coleman at 35, he's gassed, he's done. And talk about knees to the head of a grounded fighter and how that changes it. Coleman, for those of you who haven't seen it, just bombards Vovchanchin knee after knee to the head. And Vovchanchin is stuck, and he finally taps out due to those knees. I can't believe he didn't black out. And then Coleman does his celebration, John, where he kind of tries to jump on the ring ropes, and he falls, and he does.
He did the King Kong, man.
But, you know, I think because more people, especially he did do the King Kong, more people know Mark Coleman than Igor Vovchanchin. They don't realize how big an upset that was, but Igor Vovchanchin was Fedor Emelianenko before Fedor Emelianenko was.
You know what?
Fedor
if you're going to go with the Igor Vovchanchin, the biggest upset would have been Trey Teligman fought Igor Vovchanchin.
Yeah.
Now, Trey Teligman is a guy that got beat by Vitor Belfort. He got beat by Pedro Hizo in the UFC. They let go of him. He goes and he fought Igor on like a 2-week notice because I think Ken Shamrock was supposed to fight him. And they pulled Ken because of some injury, and they put Trey Teligman in there, and Trey Teligman beat Igor, and that was a huge upset. So that would be up there. But all right, my next one off of Edgar and Penn. People don't remember this fight, but the UFC had the first lightweight champion they ever had was Jens Pulver.
Yep.
And Jens Pulver left the UFC, had some fights outside of it. And came back, and they brought in a young kid that nobody knew named Joe Lozon. And Joe Lozon knocked out Jens Pulver in the first round. Nobody knew who Joe Lozon was except guys from back in Boston and Massachusetts. And that was a huge upset because they brought Jens back to be a guy to challenge for the title. And that, to me, was a huge upset.
All right, my next one, and this is my number one. And I was just talking about Coleman against Vovchanchin. Now, this is the flip side of Mark Coleman. You refereed this. You know where I'm going. July 1997, Maurice Smith defeats Mark Coleman. So put this in perspective. Coleman is 6-0, 6 finishes. He basically has taken ground and pound to a new level. No one had thought of that. Don Fry didn't think about it doing it this way. Not even Dan Severn with those huge takedowns. So Coleman just looks completely impenetrable, and he's the reigning UFC heavyweight champion, 1992 U.S. Olympian from freestyle wrestling, has everything. Maurice Smith, he's a kickboxer, moves to MMA. His pro MMA record, John, entering that bout, I had to look it up on SureDog. I knew it was a losing record, 5-7, and Smith wins. It goes 21 minutes. And Smith wins by decision. For me, historically, that's the first time that a high-level, basically, striker beats a high-level, basically, grappler. Again, July 1997. So we're 5 years into the sport, 4.5 years into our sport. I think that was a real tipping point, too. And
it was.
Maybe lost to history. But from your perspective, you refereed it. That, to me, is number one. I think it's, Sarah and St. Pierre is on my list, and that would be my number two. But I still think that historically, from at the time, how they were perceived, that's the biggest upset we've ever seen in MMA.
It was huge, especially at the time. It was huge. I always say Smith won by respirator hold. He took the lungs out of Mark. Yeah, but no, that was a huge turn of events. That was because everyone was saying strikers couldn't win in MMA, and Maurice came in and he implemented a really smart game plan. He had a great butterfly guard that he would use.
Amazing guard. He won it with the guard, didn't he?
Yeah, he would use a butterfly guard, and he was able to control a lot of what was happening. Because back then, at that fight, headbutts were legal. And Mark would, if you tied up Mark's arms, he would take his head and just beat you to death. And so, Maurice had a lot to deal with, and he was able to keep Mark from headbutting him much, and elbowing and punching was just nullified, and he wore him down. And eventually when he got back to his feet, he started breaking him down. And that was a great fight by Moraes.
So that's my list. You had two of my five. That's my five.
All right. Well, yeah, I got my Sarah GSP, Fedor Verdum, Edgar Penn, Lozon Pulver, and then I got to say one of the biggest upsets because I never saw it coming. Now, it's at a different point in careers and stuff, and that's why, you know, it's kind of like when, you know, I talked about the Weidman Silva. Silva was, you know, at an age of 38 or so when that fight happened, so he's older. But this fight was back in 2004, and this is Anderson Silva, and he fought Rio Chonin.
Oh, yeah.
And he got flying scissor takedown into a heel hook and tapped out. And that was a huge upset because no one looked at that like Chonin was going to be able to beat Silva. And that was, you know, probably about five fights before Silva ended up in the UFC, beating Chris Lieben, then taking on the champ in Franklin and having that incredible run. That was a big, big upset. That was a huge upset. And that's the kind of fight where Chonin was not brought in there to win that fight. And he found a way to win it. So that to me is a huge upset. I liked it.
Let us hear from you. So aside from voting in our poll question this week, letsgetitonpodcast.com, email us info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. What did we miss? What for you ranks as the biggest or one of the biggest upsets in MMA history? We always want to hear from you, and it's great our listener base spread out literally around the world. Let's get your perspective. Maybe it's from a smaller promotion. Maybe it's two fighters that have kind of been lost to history from the 1990s, but definitely let us know what you think. Well, while the UFC was in Australia this past weekend, ONE Championship was in Singapore with a really strong card that had the scheduled main event of their undefeated welterweight champion, Ben Askren, the former Bellator welterweight champion, versus also a former Bellator fighter, Luis Santos. This was for the title. Now, the two had previously fought in the promotion back in April. The title bout ended in a no contest. John, you and I spoke about it extensively here on Let's Get It On, but this rematch never occurred. So on the second attempt, Santos weighs in at 172. Again, it's welterweight, so it's a 170-pound fight. And because it's a title fight, there's no point one over. You have to hit 170 even. Askren then says, look, I'll fight Santos as long as he comes in tomorrow and he does not weigh more than 190 pounds. Santos says, I refuse. He says a lot of very unpleasant things towards Ben Askren, and the fight is canceled. Victor Cui, who's the CEO of ONE Championship, really was disappointed with Luis Santos, didn't even put him back on the scale the next day. They pulled the plug on the main event. That's really unfortunate for ONE Championship, and it's really unfortunate for Ben Askren.
Yeah, it is. You know, Ben went through an entire training camp. Ben went and did what he was supposed to do. Ben went and look, it's as simple as this. And I say it all the time. You have three requirements as a fighter. There's three things that you must do. First off, you need to be on time. You're on time because every other fighter is waiting for you. That's wrong. You don't make other people wait for you. You're on time for all the different things because there's scheduling that goes on with fighting and there's scheduling, you know, to go speak to the announcers so the announcers have some background on you. And if you're late, then you back everybody else up and stuff. So the first rule is, God damn it, be on time. Second rule, make weight. And we've said it before on this show. That's your job. You have three things to do. Frickin' be on time, make weight, and then go fight hard. I'm not telling you to go win. I'm not even telling you you have to train hard, but go fight hard because the fans have paid for you to entertain them. They've paid for that fight. Go do your best. That's all that's required of you. And Luis Santos does not do the things that are required of a professional fighter. When you come in, his first weight, he was 175.
Disgraceful.
5 pounds overweight for a championship fight. You would think that a championship fight is important to you. So you come in 5 pounds overweight. Then you come back after they give you all this time, which they shouldn't have done. It wouldn't have happened with a regulatory body, but they let him try to lose the weight, and he comes back, and he's 2 pounds over. And then when Askren says, hey, I'll fight him anyways, just I don't want him to be over 190 pounds, that's a reasonable request. And Luis Santos doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want to fight because anybody that really wanted to fight would say, okay, I'll do it. Knowing, yes, I can put on quite a few pounds here, but I can't just go and gorge myself, but I'll show up and I'll weigh 190, no problem. he didn't want to fight. And so Luis Santos is, you know, he's basically put himself in a position no one's going to want to use him. He's not going to get another fight at 1FC, I would doubt.
No.
Okay, that ain't going to happen. Victor Cuis, you know, has had enough. And so congratulations, you just wrecked, you know, that relationship there. You know, you had the fight with Askren before. It ended when you decided, you know, the eye poke was so bad that you couldn't see. Okay, no problem. They gave you a chance at coming back and doing it again. Obviously, you didn't want the fight. And now, go back home. Get your little fights where you can, which he does a lot. He's got a great record, but he hasn't beaten anybody. Hasn't beaten anybody. So, you know what? No problem. It's really no loss. It's no loss to 1FC. I feel bad for Askren. Askren went and did exactly what he's supposed to do as a fighter. He met his requirements, and his opponent didn't have the class to do the same.
So Santos, this would have been his 73rd pro MMA fight. I know him from when he fought in Bellator. I know Ben Askren. I really like Ben Askren a lot. I'm a big fan of Ben Askren as a fighter and as a person. And I thought Askren handled this like a champion. And it's interesting, John, I'm sure this drove you crazy when you were a police officer for the LAPD, the lack of personal accountability. What does Santos do? He says how this is the failings of Ben Askren. It's not the failings of Luis Santos. This is the failings of Ben Askren that this fight didn't happen. No personal accountability.
Yeah. You know, you're trying to put blame where it doesn't belong. Look at, put the blame where it belongs. You did not meet your responsibilities. That's as simple as it gets. You know, if you're going to be a professional fighter, you have those things that are required of you. And if you can't meet those requirements, then don't be a professional fighter. You know, I admit I don't want to make weight right now. Okay. I don't want to have to go cut weight. So I'm not a professional fighter.
You didn't sign a contract.
There you go. Okay. I don't sit there and I don't let somebody else train hard for the fight and, you know, fly all the way to Singapore, you know, from Milwaukee, you know, and then make it so there is no fight. You know, it happened recently, you know, I'm trying to think, there was a Bellator, Ryan Couture. His opponent showed up 17 pounds overweight. You know, it's like, are you kidding me? You know, what did you stuff a water hose down your throat and turn it on? Are you kidding? You know, just ridiculous. It's so disrespectful to do that, you know, to your opponent, because your opponent's training hard and they're expecting, there is a, you know, no matter what, you know, most people don't think about it. There's a payoff in being able to fight. All the training is the grueling part. Yeah, if you end up, you know, having a hard fight, it's grueling and it's tough. And if you lose, it sucks too. But it is the payoff, and that's what you do it for. And when you don't get that opportunity because your opponent didn't meet their obligations, that sucks.
Santos pulled out the excuse that, how many times have you and I heard this, John? Wow, it was an international fight and I retained a lot of water. Again, Santos, his pro debut was March 2000. He's been on countless international flights. He's from Brazil, and then he was based in St. Louis for a while and in Florida, and he's fought literally all over the world. So he didn't know this water retention thing until now, until his 73rd MMA fight.
Santos would not agree to fight at 190 pounds. That's 20 pounds over his weight class. That's into the middleweight weight class. Okay. So to sit there and to say, oh, you know, I didn't realize I'd retain water on a flight, you know, please. Okay. You didn't want to fight. All right. I was just working out this weekend with, you know, someone who's got a professional fight coming up. He was a world champion, and I'm working out with him and we're checking his weight, and he's 11 pounds over his weight that he has to make, that is over a month away. Okay. Now, that's what a professional does. He has his weight in line with where he's at. So when he gets to the day of the weigh-in, he has to lose 5 pounds of weight or so. He goes out for a run, does some working out, comes in, weighs in, and then goes and eats and is happy. All right. That's what a professional does. A professional doesn't do what Luis Santos did.
Through my career, and John, I'm sure through your career, you've seen a constant. If you come in and you're polite and you're respectful, even if you get knocked out in the first minute, there's a good chance that promotion will bring you back. But if you come in and you're arrogant and you're rude to the staff and you miss weight, doesn't matter what you do result-wise, you're probably not coming back. And again, that's it with Luis Santos. I mean, you could make the argument that he's the second best welterweight after Askren on the entire ONE Championship roster, and I don't think he's ever going to fight for them again. I'm speculating, but why would they bring him back after this?
I can't figure out a reason.
You know, if he's not going, he's already been in Bellator. The UFC wouldn't pick him up for this. No. Maybe World Series of Fighting, but you're probably looking at regional cards either in Florida or back in Brazil.
No, if you look at, you know, when you look at a real fighter, you know, I'm not saying Luis Santos is, he can fight. Okay. He can fight. I'm not going to say he can't fight. He can. But he's a certain type of fighter. He does very well when things are going his way. And as soon as they don't start going his way, he falls off the turnip truck. And if you look at his record, he's got a beautiful record. I mean, he's got a lot of fights. But you look at a lot of his opponents, you know, they're 0-2, 0-4, 0-1. You know, for a guy that's had 30-some fights and you're fighting a guy that's 0-2 in his career, you know, come on. What's up with that? You know, and so you look, and he has absolutely fought some tough people. He fought Ben Saunders in Bellator, I know. He fought Ryan Ford. Ryan's a really good athlete. He's a guy from up in Canada. You know, tough guy. He lost to Ryan. He lost to Ben Saunders. You know, every time he fought that guy that you look and say, okay, this will prove something, he ended up on the short end of it, because being the bully guy, the guy that, you know, muscle guys around and beat up on lesser guys, is not going to get it over when you start stepping up in class, a fighter, and getting to the higher levels.
John, as a final point on this, we had the great Art Davey on, UFC creator, on the program last week to mark the 22nd anniversary of the first Ultimate Fighting Championship. We put it in the book that Art and I wrote together about the first UFC, Is This Legal? The story that Kevin Rozier had only spoken to Art on the phone, and Art had done his due diligence, his research, and he knew that Rozier was a bigger heavyweight, super heavyweight as a kickboxer, but Rozier assured Art Davey he was 265 pounds. Art personally drives to Stapleton Airport, the old Stapleton Airport in Denver. There's Rozier, about 325 pounds. He says, "Art, well, I think I put on a few pounds." No kidding. And, you know, here we are 22 years later. Santos obviously wasn't that heavy, but still, whether you say you're 265 and you're rolling at 325, or you sign to make 170 and you're rolling at 175, you've let the promoter down.
Yeah, you know, again, there are certain responsibilities you have. Meet those responsibilities. That's part of being a professional.
We are back with you next week for an all-new episode of Let's Get It On, first available on Friday. Download and subscribe to our podcast on the iTunes Store. For Android, download the Stitcher app and subscribe. And you can go straight to our website, letsgetitonpodcast.com. You can also find us on social media, facebook.com/letsgetitonpodcast, and on Twitter, at @podcastmma for this show, and for us personally, at @JohnMcCarthyMMA and at @SeanWheelock. To ask us a question, make a comment, or inquire about becoming a sponsor of Let's Get It On, email us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Again, that's info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. And as we do say on this program, this is your podcast as much as it is ours. Please help us spread the word and continue to expand our audience worldwide. For Big John McCarthy, our outstanding producer Chris Lakin, and our entire crew, I'm Sean Wheelock. Thanks for listening, everyone. This has been a presentation of Lineup Media Group, online at lineupmediagroup.com.
Let's Get It On with Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock on the Lineup Media Group Podcast Network. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever you listen to the show. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in sponsoring Let's Get It On, contact us at info@letsgetitonpodcast.com. Get all the Lineup Media Group podcasts, like Jason Bucks with Panger on NHLPodcast.com, Ocho Man, Behind the 8-Ball, and You're on the Clock NFL on our website at lineupmediagroup.com.